Toxicologist Michael Gallo is speaking at the Armory at Sage College of Albany tonight about environmental contaminants and efforts to counteract chemical terrorism. Dr. Gallo is Professor Emeritus of Environmental and Occupational Medicine at Rutgers University's Robert Wood Johnson Medical School and an investigator with its Counteract Research Center of Excellence, which designs therapies to respond to chemical terrorism. Gallo spoke with WAMC News about the risks of PCBs and PFOA, chemicals that have impacted many communities in the region.
In looking at the PCBs, the dioxins, and the PFOAs, if you will, actually we look at the toxicity first, because what risk is a combination of the hazards or the toxicity and the exposure levels. So we look at the toxicity of these. PCBs and dioxins are considerably more toxic than the PFOAs and the PFOS. And they've been shown, in humans anyway, to cause chloracne. And there have been some interesting world cases in that where people have attempted to kill individuals. The former premier or president of Ukraine was poisoned by dioxin and survived. There's been a couple of other cases of that sort. So the question there is, what is the dose? And so what we look at is the toxicity of those types of chemicals, and then we look at the exposure. With the PFOAs, the exposure is almost universal at this point. In the process of manufacturing of the Teflons and those types of compounds, those PFOAs and PFOSs are being released. And so we are all, if we were to draw blood samples on all of us, I am sure we would find PFOAs. For those of us of a certain age, if you were to do the same blood samples, you would find our exposures to DDT going back to the 50s and 60s before it was really banned. And you would find some dioxins in all of us because they're there. They're not only from the exposures of the chemicals, from the chemical manufacturing or the use in Vietnam or the use on our lawns, which everybody did until the mid-70s with Agent Orange, though they may not have called it Agent Orange at the time. It was 2,4-5-T. So that's going to be there as well. So then you look at those risks. And the way those risks are calculated, they are obviously statistical. And most of the risks, many of the risks, particularly cancer, is based on primarily animal studies and epidemiology studies. And in the animal studies, there's no question that the dioxins are very carcinogenic at very, very low doses. The question is, even at those low doses, are we exposed to that level? And we're just barely at the lowest possible level, at least according to the director of the National Institutes of Environmental Health Sciences.
And Dr. Gallo, the world has just seen another reported chemical attack in Syria. What work have you and others in your field been doing to counteract chemical terrorism?
Well, the main thing that we're doing is, in this center, in the Counteract Center, is looking at new agents, new drugs that can be used either in the field or within populations to counter the drugs that are being used. If you in the sarin attack in Syria this past 2 weeks, if you notice, they were hosing down the individuals. That's to get it off the skin. This stuff goes through the skin, goes through the lungs, and to this day, we only have one or two antidotes to things like sarin, somen, and as we saw with the apparent assassination of the half-brother of the North Korean premier, VX, which is an extremely toxic neurotoxin of the same class. We really don't have any good antidotes other than what we had in the 1950s and 60s, primarily atropine and a few of the others. In fact, the military still carries atropine on their bodies when they're in the theater over there. And that's what we're trying to do. What we're trying to come up with as an overall team is to look at things that are better antidotes to the neurotoxins, the organophosphate neurotoxins, which is the class that they are. And these are similar to pesticides that have been used for probably since 1947 or 48. They're not as potent as these nerve agents, the gases. And so we're looking at the way to if you excuse the pun, to attack these toxins or how they work in the body. Our job at our center is to look at mustard gases. Mustard gases were used in World War I, and they were used to kill civilians in the Iraq-Iran war of the 80s, where Saddam Hussein bombed a Kurdish city in the north of Iraq and killed somewhere between 4,000 to 7,000 people and injured another 7,000 or 10,000 with blistering agents causing blindness. They died of lung disease, rapid fibrosis of the lung, and they had blisters on their bodies and in their eyes. We're working on that specific aspect. It's a very the lungs coming along at our place and in others is working out relatively well. There are new agents out there being new drugs out there being used to treat things like psoriasis that apparently have anti-inflammatory effects in the lung as well, at least in that in laboratory mice. And that's been very progressive. The work in the eye and on the skin, from an individual point of view, has been very good. We've identified a couple of compounds that have worked relatively well there. The problem there is the delivery to a large population that's exposed. These are mustard gases. It's not really a gas. It's an oily mixture. It's sticky. It gets on the skin. You have to get it off. If it gets in the eye, you have minutes to get it out. Then you have these other drugs to put in, which can only be put in individuals at one at a time. You can't carry them in. You couldn't use them as a, if you will, a spray or something or an aerosol to protect the people. So that's what we're working on.
And you mentioned how the counteract measures are applied. Are they a shot? Are they a needle?
Well, that's a good question. Atropine, as a drug, is given as a shot intramuscularly. So when I was in the Marine Corps, we carried these little sarets that really were needles with little tubes on the end, and if there was and we did this in practice, we were never exposed to those types of agents, but if there was a gas attack, you would inject it into your leg, right? Today, they do basically the same thing. And these people that go to hospital, if they are having the symptoms and the signs of an organophosphate attack, like a sarin, if they have the time to do it, they will get these patients on drugs like atropine and a few others to turn it around. Many of them don't make it, and it's a very tough drug to deal with because of the timing. But the answer to your question is no, there are no mass ways of prevention. In my talk tonight, I'm going to say, still the best prevention from these gas, for at least for our troops, are gas masks and cover. And I think that's probably true. Not probably. It has to be true for the population. Be indoors where you have less exposure, the windows closed, in the basement. These are the types of things that are being used today. In fact, if you read the reports on the attack a couple of weeks ago, many of the survivors, when they realized what was happening, first they ran outside because of the bombs. Then they realized there was not a place to be. They went back into their basements, closed the windows, because that's the only thing to protect yourself in a mass attack like that. We do not have agents that can be delivered the same way, basically, to affect the massive population.